but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Steven, you're reaching, DJ Steven, reaching into the annals. What else should we bring back on this show?
You like
this
one, huh?
Yeah. That's Tone Loc, right?
Tone Loc, yeah. Funky Cole Medina.
Oh, yeah. It's my era. My generation. Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On College Football, Locked On the Ducks, joining us now. Spencer, where are you? Live via satellite. Where are you? At home? You in your studio? Are you on the golf course? What are you doing?
No, the golf course was earlier today. I'm at my relatively new apartment complex in St. George, poolside with zucchini on the barbecue and
ooh,
just kind of watching the water go by. It's really relaxing. It's 80 degrees. It's perfectly shaded where I'm sitting. I'm in a lawn chair right now, John. Life is hard.
I like that. I like that, and I think you're setting a good example for the rest of us. Before I get into Ducks and college football and all of that stuff, give me an idea where you live in Utah. Do people talk about BYU more? Do they talk about Utah more? What's the state of things right now? You're in the grocery store. What are people talking about?
I'd say there's a slight edge to BYU down here in southern Utah. As you go up north, I think it is very evenly split. BYU and Utah both have great fans. The Beehive State, John, is one that loves their sports. They take it very seriously. They're very passionate. Those two schools cannot stand each other, and I love it so much, so much. And you know, there are a lot of other non-FBS Division I schools. There are actually 7 Division I schools athletically in the entire state, and they've all got some solid fan bases. But yeah, I'd say there's more BYU down here than Utah by just a little bit. And I think they really go for anything that's got that logo attached to it. You know, if the baseball team were where Oregon is right now, I bet you they'd be buzzing. But, you know, whether it's basketball, football, portal, like whatever it is, it seems like they're always very, very engaged out here.
Spencer, the college football landscape, you know, a lot of what we see at the top of college football is about who's spending the money, who has the resources, the top teams, the odds for next year. You could pretty much go down and go, okay, it's Ohio State, it's, you know, Oregon and Texas and Georgia and Penn State. And these teams that are all near the top are all going to be teams that have money. Is it good for college football for that to be the case? Or do we need an outlier? Like, you know, Arizona State almost beat Texas last year. Boise State was mixing it up with Penn State. I was hopeful that would be, you know, a tight game. What do we need for college football to be healthy?
I think a salary cap on NIL and roster spending is warranted, or else you risk following the model of Major League Baseball, which is a disaster. I mean, the way that the Dodgers have just been allowed, I don't blame the Dodgers for doing what, you know, they've done over the last several years and deferring Ohtani's contract and whatnot. I blame the institution that allows that to exist. And so, you know, you're walking a fine line between, on the one hand, you don't want, you know, the smaller schools to feel like they have no shot whatsoever. On the other hand, you also want to reward investment. You know, a lot of these places, John, athletically don't yet have the money they need to be at the big level, but it doesn't mean they can't get there one day. And so I think that if you can find the right balance between those two things where, hey, if you're committed to the max, you're going to be rewarded for that. And if you start to go down that path, there are going to be tangible benefits. Balancing that with, yeah, Ohio State's going to win it once every 3 years just because they spend more money. And it's not just about money even now. I mean, Oregon spends a ton of money, and they're still chasing that first national championship. So I think that that's where I would like to see it go, is figure out how you keep those two competing interests alive and well.
Spencer, the Oregon spring game, you've got Luke Moga, you've got the obviously Dante Moore as the potential starter, Austin Novosad in the mix. What's going to happen in that quarterback room at Oregon in your mind?
I think Dante Moore is going to start. I think Austin Novosad is going to be his backup, and those two guys, Novosad and Moga, who are going to back up Dante Moore this year, are going to wait and see how good of a season he has. I mean, you know, Moga coming out of high school was much more of a project, and he was not an efficient passer in high school. He, you know, had a good arm, but maybe wasn't quite, you know, ready. Like, he was never supposed to start early in his career. His jump from year one to year two, John, was what stood out the most to me in that Oregon spring game. Was he looked like a guy who could go out and win Oregon some games, maybe not get into the playoff, because, you know, you have to allow for the experience to come into play, and he's still going to make mistakes and whatnot. But, I mean, he didn't get any favors with drops. He made good decisions on throwaways. He flashed the athleticism. He made accurate throws. He hit throws at all three levels. I really thought he was exceptional, and I don't think that he's expecting to play this year, nor should he. He's taken a step forward, but you got to remember that I think that was just unexpected and why it was a big story. Dante Moore was still really good. And so if Dante Moore, with all the weapons he's got, Kenny Sadiq and DeCorian Moore and Evan Stewart and all those guys, if he goes out and has an incredible year, he'll be eligible for the NFL draft. I mean, I don't expect him to be a Heisman finalist this year, but if he is, maybe he says, yeah, I'll go after 1 year of starting, take the Mitch Trubisky route, really, and get drafted in the first round, and that could depend on what the rest of the quarterback class is looking like. So if that happens, then you can just about sharpie in a quarterback battle between Moga and Novosad. Maybe Achilles Smith Jr. throws his hat in the ring, who I also thought looked really good on Saturday. You can write that down as being a surefire thing for 2026. I think if Dante Moore does what I expect him to and start this year, have a good season, but still have some room for growth, if he comes back to Oregon in 26, I think you'll see one of Moga or Novosad transfer, because those guys are too talented to just keep sitting there and, you know, only have the chance to start one or maybe 2 years in college football.
We're talking to Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Ducks, Locked On College Football podcast, and a contributor at 750thegame.com. Spencer, in the Big Ten, Penn State, maybe Michigan has a resurgence this year. They were in a bit of a rebuild and a transition. Here comes Ohio State. Where do you draw the line for teams that are contenders in the Big Ten?
Well, I want to start. I love this particular topic, because what the odds market currently says is not how I feel, and maybe, you know, I'll quote unquote come to my senses by the time the season rolls around. But John, can you tell me why Penn State shouldn't be viewed as the favorites in the Big Ten?
They should.
They should be. They're third behind Oregon, Ohio State. I think that's brand bias. If you did a blind resume of those three teams, there is no way, there's no way that you would favor Oregon and Ohio State over Penn State to win the Big Ten. Penn State plays both of those teams. They all three have the same preseason win total at 10.5, but Penn State is bringing back almost everyone. They've upgraded what was their weakest position. Yeah, they lose Abdul Carter. That's a hit to the defense, no doubt. But they just took Ohio State's defensive coordinator, who won the national championship, and Jim Knowles, and they bring back the quarterback for a third or fourth year starting with Drew Aller, both running backs, upgrade the receiver room, still have talent at tight end without Tyler Warren, four starters on the offensive line. Oregon and Ohio State are outside the top 100 nationally. I know Oregon is. I'm pretty sure Ohio State is as well. In returning production, Penn State is well inside the top 20. So there's no way that Penn State shouldn't be seen as the favorite. As for Michigan, I think they're a 2026 contender. They're undergoing a change at quarterback in a good sense. You know, they have Bryce Underwood, the number one quarterback, and Mikey Keene, the Fresno State transfer, hasn't been healthy. So, you know, I don't expect him to necessarily be some, you know, championship-winning guy for them. But I think Michigan is in a transition year again. But then for 2026, with the way they recruit and the way that they develop, the style they have, I think in 26, Michigan gets back into the fold. I think USC can take a step forward this year. I don't know that I'd put them up near the top. If you wanted a dark horse Big Ten title contender, I'd throw Nebraska in there. I really would. I think Matt Rhule is a really good coach. He just took him to a bowl game for the first time since Mike Riley was the head coach in 2016. You've got a five-star in Dylan Raiola back at quarterback for his second season after starting all of last year. And, you know, they got out to that, I think it was a 6-1 start or something like that, 5-1, 6-1 before they lost a bunch of games down the stretch. I think, you know, even though they lost their defensive coordinator, which hurts, Matt Rhule's a really good coach. Dana Holgorsen is in there as offensive coordinator. I think that's a team maybe to watch in the Big Ten. I think your best three rosters overall, in no particular order, are Penn State, Ohio State, and Oregon. I think you could see another team get into the fold. I just don't know that I'm ready to trust anybody yet. And, you know, I'll just throw Nico at UCLA in there for fun, but no.
Is it possible that James Franklin's the reason, and it's not just brand bias, but I buy into it because I think right away the odds makers are going Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan, you know, put the big brands up there. But James Franklin, does he give you any pause?
Yeah. I mean, he has to. The record against top five and top 10 teams is not good. He is still a really good coach. And here's the thing with James Franklin. It's not as if he's a mile away. Look at the games he lost to Ohio State and Oregon last year. He lost them both by one possession. He's not going into these games and getting trounced. He's not getting embarrassed. He's just finding different ways to lose close games. Same thing with Notre Dame. And this goes back to my point about, you know, Penn State should be the favorite. They were in the Final Four last year. They were in the semifinal. They had the ball in a tie game with a chance to go down and win it to play for a national championship. They didn't execute that. That's been a James Franklin hallmark. I'm not trying to argue that particular point. I'm saying that a guy who is that close that many times with that team and brings back so much, whereas the other teams that are seen as more likely to win it than Penn State bring back almost none of their major production from a year ago. Yeah, they've recruited well, but those Oregon and Ohio State teams were so good because they recruited well previously and they had guys in the system for several years. For Ohio State, that was Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau and you know, a bunch of guys on the offensive line. For Oregon, it was Josh Connerly, Terrence Ferguson, Jeffrey Bosa, like third, fourth year guys in the system. I think that that mattered a whole heck of a lot. Penn State has that opportunity this year. And Franklin's got two outstanding coordinators with Jim Knowles, who I mentioned, and Andy Kotelnicki, who would have been the West Virginia head coach, but he wanted to make a run with Penn State. They wanted him to leave in the middle of the playoff run. He said, no, I could win a national championship, and he came pretty close. So, you know, Franklin's been close for a long time, and I just wonder if this is the year of guys who have been close forever breaking through, because if Rory McIlroy can do it at Augusta, John, what can't happen?
There you go. I love it. Spencer McLaughlin with us talking college football. Bill Belichick's had some distractions. Everybody's talking about his girlfriend. Where do you see North Carolina in the ACC?
Fighting for bowl eligibility. I mean, I don't understand, and I heard this from someone connected to the program. There was widespread confusion amongst alumni, former players, and people who want to see the program become what it has the potential to be, but never really has been. Like, they've been, you know, the last couple of years under Mac Brown, they'd get off to these hot starts and they would fade late because they had good talent, but not great talent. I think they underachieve on the recruiting trail. It started to dip in the Mac Brown tenure. I don't know if that's going to tick up in a significant way with Bill Belichick at the helm, but the off-season girlfriend circus is just the epitome of why this was such a head-scratching decision. Bill Belichick is a big name, and that's it. Tell me the last time he was a great coach. The answer is probably about 2020, 19 or so. He wasn't good with the Patriots the last several years. He's doing something he's never done before. And, you know, it's April, so the girlfriend thing gets more play than it might during the season. It's just emblematic of how out of place this all feels. I don't view them as a contender. I think they finished 3-9 before they'd finish 9-3. I think they'll probably be a 5-6 win team. They've made some solid portal additions, but, you know, they bring in a quarterback from South Alabama and Gio Lopez, who is kind of like Dylan Gabriel light, very light, you know, coming from the group of five ranks. And Gabriel was at UCF once upon a time, and Lopez is left-handed, scrappy, undersized, and just figures out a way to make plays. And I mean, I think that's fine. I don't think that's winning you the ACC. You're not beating Clemson, who's a national title contender. You're not beating Miami, who's going to have a really good roster again, and Carson Beck, a quarterback. Heck, I don't think you're beating Duke, who had one of the quietest strong seasons in all of college football last year. So, yeah, I've been down on the Belichick thing from the moment that it happened. It never felt right. It still doesn't. It continues to get weirder and weirder, and just feels like a nepotistic play to try to get his son a head coaching job one day.
All right, I want to ask you, you know, you're in your 20s. This is, yeah. He's 73, Jordan Hudson's 24. They're both adults. Gosh. They're both adults. But
all right.
Could you see yourself in a relationship with a 73-year-old partner?
You know, I am a grown-ish adult, and yet still somehow if that happened, John, I think my mother would cut my head off, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
And that'd be a driving force. I mean, solid rule of thumb in that realm. Would my mom think this is a good idea?
Like, yeah.
And if the answer is no, you should probably at least think about why. If not, go straight to, I'm probably not going to do this then. The whole spectacle of that, I wasn't expecting to get that asked that question yeah. ever in my life, because I thought it was just so obviously true. But I will stake my claim right now on the record, John. No, I do not see myself in a 50-year relationship gap.
I also, do you think it's an issue? Do you watch? Is it a story? Is her behavior? Does it raise questions about his control? Is it a distraction? To what length do you go? Because when I bring it up to some people, they're like, yeah, this is a valid conversation. We got to talk about how worried we are about this guy. Other people are like, no, he's an adult. She's an adult. It's non-story. Where do you stand?
Well, I think you have, just because you have two adults doesn't mean that one can't be trying to take advantage of the other in some way. I think that's a regular occurrence in society. So I'm not going to sit here and just lean back on the, they're adults, it's whatever. Like, no, that doesn't mean that it's good for either of them to be in this situation. I really don't think that it is. I think it's more of an off-season story than an in-season story. I think the only in-season angle I can wrap around with that, John, is it makes you question his decision-making at this point in his life. If he's pursuing that and saying, this is a good idea, then I'd wonder how well he can actually run a football program, because I can't imagine it's a great look for, you know, the NIL boosters at North Carolina, who, from what I've been told, want to have a good competitive football program. Their rival, Duke, over in Durham, is doing just that. They just paid Darian Mensah $8 million for 2 years. He's one of the highest-paid quarterbacks in all of college football after one season at Tulane. They're going at least in a more committed route to being successful in football. And I think this is just another factor, not the driving one, but certainly a reason that someone that dons that baby blue has to wonder, like, is this really the guy that is going to take our football program where it hasn't been before? I don't see how that is the case. I continue to view it as a worse and worse situation for Tar Heel fans. I wish them the best, but also I kind of wish them the worst so that they could get a coach in there that that is going to be able to allow them to succeed.
Spencer McLaughlin, you're the best. Are you alone at the pool? Are there other people there?
There are a couple of people around. Very rude of them to use a common space and not understand. I was hoping to have some alone time in a common space, but I'll allow it.
Set the scene for the rest of us. You know, you're a 20-something guy. You're hanging out at the pool there on a lazy Thursday evening, and, you know, set the scene for us. What do you see? Play by play.
I mean, there are probably about a dozen palm trees scattered throughout surrounding a pool. There's a hot tub down where a couple people are enjoying a nice little toasty dip at the moment. There's a fountain in front of the name of the building in the back edge. It's 80 degrees. The whole place pretty much is shaded. You can find some sun if you want. Don't need it. 80 degrees, and I'm incredibly comfortable. I played in the U.S. Open qualifier earlier this morning, and I was not displeased with how it went, but you will not be seeing me as an amateur next to Rory McIlroy. Not this year, anyway, but you know, I'll keep up the fight.
Keep up the fight, my friend. All right. Wish you the best.
Indeed.
Stay away from the 73-year-olds. Okay, there he goes. Spencer McLaughlin off on his way. Did you hear his? He was aghast, Stephen, when I said, you know, could you see yourself with a 73-year-old? He was aghast. He said his mom will not go for that. Leave it here. We got some parting thoughts coming up.